The Yoetzet program for inviting me to speak. Rabbi Berger, thank you. My role here, in some ways, is that I'm the rabbi of Mount Sinai Jewish Center, and we have kind of been spoiled and blessed over the last couple of years that we've had some wonderful Yoetzot. We had Atara Ice, who I'm sure you all know, and now we have Dina Block, who serves as the Yoetzet in our shul. And just like a word or two about what that experience is, and then we'll kind of move into actual learning Torah. I think in some ways I make Dina Block crazy. In other ways, it's a great experience. The truth is, working in Mount Sinai is probably a little different than in other places. I actually taught NIDA in YU 2 years ago. This coming year, I'll be teaching NIDA in Yeshiva again. So I sort of have my own opinions about certain things, which are at times different than what you learn. Again, it's all Torah, it's all wonderful, it's all great, but sometimes we have some different opinions, and the bringing a Yoetzet into Mount Sinai in some ways is a little more of a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity to really learn Torah with someone. Dina and I spent a good deal of time at the beginning of her career just learning together, reviewing certain things, discussing various positions on Shilas that would come up, and then as Shilas do come up, it's really been a great experience. Part of the advantage in having a Yoetzet is, I have to admit, I'm male, and sometimes women are more comfortable asking Shilas. I'm pretty convinced that the volume of Shilas in total that gets asked now in the shul is greater than was asked beforehand. And that, I think, is the, if we put one sentence on what's the purpose of the program, it's to increase Shilas. It's to increase people asking questions and engaging in the halachic process. The answer, in some ways, is less important than the fact that a question is asked. People who are asking a question, my experience has been that if you're machmir, they aren't devastated. The very fact that they're asking a question, again, sometimes they are, and you have to deal with tears at times, Dina more than me, but that's a reality of the system. But people often are surprised when the answer is a kula, rather than devastated when the answer is a chumrah. And I'm bringing this up kind of as an introduction to the topic that we'll be discussing today, which is, how do we define what is a shas hadchak? I speak Hebrew and Ashkenazis. If you need translation, I'm sure people around the table will translate. But how can we define, how do we define what a shas hadchak is? Meaning to say, there are standard rules of psak halacha, things that we get from our teachers, our rabbim. We have general approaches, but we all know that there are certain situations that are emergency situations, are very difficult situations. And a difficult situation requires us to kind of open up the svarim again and look into the sugya and try as hard as possible not to be on autopilot, but to relearn the sugya, and perhaps there's some kula that we can come up with. And that's obviously, the whole halachic process is based on this. But the question as to what is called a shas hadchak and what isn't is something that requires analysis. And I'm going to kind of let you in on some of my thoughts about this without necessarily coming to conclusions. So if you expect answers at the end of this, if you expect us to say, oh, this case is a shas hadchak, this case isn't, and the reasons are X, Y, and Z, that's not going to happen. This will kind of be a little more open-ended, a little more musings, rather than actual final maskanos. So that's, I guess, introduction part two. We had a case a while ago. I don't know if Dina discusses the cases with you that came up. The case was a woman who hadn't been to a mikveh for a few years. And the reason why she hadn't been to a mikveh is because she was on birth control pills and she only experienced some very light staining, or maybe slightly more than light staining, but clearly staining nothing that would be called a flow. She hadn't been to the mikveh for a few years because of this. It turns out that she had been getting halachic guidance that what she was experiencing was ksumim and didn't warrant her going to the mikveh. Then this woman, and I'm not exactly sure of why this happened, she went for an IUD insertion. And as part of the IUD insertion, obviously, there was some sort of bleeding. So then the question that came up is, do we paskin that she is a nida in this case? Now, the concern, obviously, with IUD insertion, and Dina was more sensitive to this than I was in some ways, is that there can be staining for somewhat of a prolonged period, a couple of weeks, certainly is not unusual. And do we say that, you know, we want to pull out all stops, make sure she will not be determined to be a nida, because it could be a few weeks without the ability of a few, in the sense of 4, 6, 8, something like that, without coming to Hora, which could obviously be difficult. On the other hand, this is a woman who, you know, let's put it into perspective. She hasn't been to the mikveh for 3 years now. So what's the worst thing if you spend a couple of weeks, you know, in a nida state when ultimately you haven't really, ultimately you haven't really experienced this for a while, and it's nishna zoygeferlach. I don't know how to translate that into Sfardit, but you understand what we're saying. So that was the question. Now, of course, there's a number of halachic issues that came up, halachic issues that I'm sure you're studying. Question of what's the status of staining bisman hazeh when no one has hargasha, etc. I'm fairly certain that the approach is that no one has hargasha today. Although Shani Tarrigan says that when she teaches, she actually always asks her classes whether anyone experiences hargasha. When I teach in yeshiva, I can't ask this question. She says that every couple of years she has a woman who says that she experiences some sort of psichas piyamakar, which I have no idea, but that's what she says. Now, what's the status of staining with...
physiologically, but we don't know that this isn't actually
happening. Yeah, so the question is if someone has some sort of psychosomatic symptoms, which probably she couldn't have had until she learned the halacha, that there is such a thing.
Or maybe it's a real symptom, but it's not. I don't know. Who knows?
Again, so this is one of the great mysteries in Judaism, or like this is the big mystery. What's the status of hargasha bisman hazeh, of staining bisman hazeh? That's one issue. And of course, in this case, it connected to the next issue of dam maka that comes from the makar, which, you know, we know is a discussion in the poskim in terms of whether we treat it like ordinary damak, or whether we assume that there's the possibility that there's genuine dam in hamakar that's coming out that's actually tumas nida in those cases. And this was an interesting case that we kind of had to balance both of these issues. I have to admit that one of my general inclinations in this question is that why was she not going to the mikveh for a few years? Like, you know, what, you're telling me that she's on the pill? There are thousands, millions of women on the pill. You know, this is considered her period again, and this is something obviously that comes from the way Rabbi Willig teaches Hilchos Nida. That was my inclination. And then the second Shaila You know, I wasn't convinced that it's so pashut that we could be make on dam mako min hamakar. It happens that, you know, there's a steer in the Chazon Ish about this point, as you're aware. Rav Shechter happens to be machmir in this question. Rav Shechter feels that mako min hamakar has the status at least of ksamim. And, you know, you put these issues together, I was inclined to be machmir on the question because I just felt that I might be mekel on dam mako min hamakar in general, but in the case like this, it's not a shas hadchak at all. This woman hasn't been to the mikvah for a couple of years, so why not take an approach that is followed by, again, certainly large numbers of poskim, perhaps even the majority of poskim, and it's a safer approach. That was my inclination in this question. Now, how we'll deal with this question, we're kind of just going to table for right now. This is, I guess, introduction part three. So now let's talk about what is called Shas HaDachak and what is not called Shas HaDachak, and when can we be lenient on a Shas HaDachak. And this conversation appears in classical poskim, but it does not appear in the Nida context. It appears, and Rabbi Berger was with me in the Kol Al Elyon of Yeshiva when we studied this, it appears in the context of Shvius, of Shemitah. So this is totally out of left field, but let's learn. It's coming up. That's sort of. I have to admit also, I'm sort of double dipping. I'm saying some shiurim about Shvius in my shul now on Thursday nights. And Rav Kook wrote a sefer that Rav Zevin called one of the greatest svarim ever. It's the Sefer Shabbat Ha'aretz. I don't know how to say that in Ashkenazis, but the Sefer Shabbat Ha'aretz of Rav Kook, it was published in 1910, obviously Shemitah 1882, 1889, etc. There was a whole discussion about Heter Mechira, about whether we can circumvent Shemitah by selling the land to non-Jews. That was the biggest conversation that led to the most Torah literature within Shemitah ever, I think. Shabbat Ha'aretz is just awesome. It's like a really, really good sefer. And the Chazon Ish basically argues with every single paragraph in the Shabbat Ha'aretz, why it's a fun topic. And one of the issues that comes up in Rav Kook's Mavo, Rav Kook's introduction to Shabbat Ha'aretz, and this is the Mavo Perek Yud, is can b'shas hadchak, can we rely on minority opinions? Meaning to say, there is a position of the Baal Hamor and the Ravid. The Ramban assumes that the Ravid didn't really hold this way. The Ravid changed his mind, but Rav Kook argues that there is such a Ravid, and there certainly is such a Baal Hamor, who assume that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is not d'oraisa, Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is not even d'rabon, and Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is a midas chasidus. Right, and if it's a midas chasidus, so maybe in the shas hadchak that involves the entire Jewish survival in Eretz Yisrael, because you have to remember, Israel today is all into high tech and computer stuff, but there was a time that the country was actually, the economy was agricultural. And the question is, in the situation of Shas HaDchak, can you rely on this position of the Raivin and Bahamar, that Shemitah is Midas Chasidus, and therefore forget Heter Mechira, you don't even have to sell the land, just, right, we solve the whole problem right away. So obviously Rav Kook is going to say that, yeah, there's what to rely on B'Shas HaDchak, and obviously the Chazon Ish will take the approach that you can't, right? Because Rav Kook is trying to approach the issue from a kula perspective, the Chazon Ish is approaching it from the Chumra perspective, but that is the context of, to my mind, the largest conversation about what can be relied upon B'Shas HaDchak and what can't be relied upon B'Shas HaDchak. So now, Rav Kook quotes the sources that I have in front of you regarding Shas HaDchak. Basically, the story goes like this. In Yerideus and Rish Tzadi Gimel, there's a halacha of Chadash and Chutz La'aretz. And Chadash and Chutz La'aretz is assumed to be Aser. The Gemara says it's Aser. Chodeshim Chotzaretz is a problem. Yet, the Ramah paskins that you shouldn't paskin to people that there's an Isser of Chodosh and Chutz La'aretz because Mutav Shu Shogigin Vayuhu Mezidin. Again, the applications of that principle are also very far-ranging, but that's what appears in the Ramah in Reish Tzadi Gimel. Comes along the Taz, and the Taz writes, the Taz writes, Ein ze kedai milahatzel asha anu roen chachme Yisrael kim at ruban ein ishar mechadosh b'shum shana. Right? Zok the Taz that this won't help us with the fact that chachme Yisrael are mekel. Right? I could say mutar shu shogigin about a regular Jane or a regular Jim or whatever, but you can't say it about chachme Yisrael. ולא שייך לומר עליה מותר של שוגגם, וכבר תרח מריחון מבדור איזה למצוא היתר מצד הירושלמי, etc. In other words, the Bach tries to come up with some heterim based on the Yerushalmi. But the Taz, it must have been a very fun Shabbos table, because the Taz is always arguing with his father-in-law about every single issue of halacha. Or maybe a very boring Shabbos table, depending on your approach. But the Taz says he doesn't think that the Bach's approach here is correct. And he writes, ultimately, the Taz comes up with an idea where he says, you know what? It's really a machloikas in the Gemara about whether there's chodosh that's osur in chutz la'aretz or not. And although there's a stam mishnah in Orla that chodosh is osur in chutz la'aretz, but it's a machloikas hatanim that appears in Kedushin. And therefore, one could argue that it's a machlokes v'achar kach stam, and we have a clear halacha. Or one could argue it's a stam v'achar kach machlokes, and we don't have a clear halacha. So the Taz concludes this conversation that, you know what? Yeah, let's try to find the lines and read it inside. It's towards the middle. He quotes that a machlokes that's quoted in Bava Kamma, in Kedushin, etc. And then he says, maybe here, the imkain. It's smack in the. You see where it says Hagoza Kamma Daf Kuf Beis in the middle of the line. One line beneath that, the imkain. Yesh on ladon velomer. Dimdinos elu shushas hadchak, dechayav shodom toloi b'shetias sheichar saurim b'shibola shuol. Kedai hu atanakama lismoch olav b'shas hadchak, kevon delo ifsika halacha b'feirish b'gemar kriblazer. Right. So what the Taz is saying is, again, we fortunately don't appreciate this. He says it's a shas hadchak to not be lenient on chodosh, because chayiv she'odom is totally b'shtiyah sheichar. Okay, you should hang this up at some beer parties or something. But people need a person's life depends on drinking beer, right? Sheichar sa'orim and shibola shul, and therefore kedai hu tanakam alis mochol b'shas hadchak kevan delo ifsika halacha b'feirish b'gemara kriblazer. Since the Gemara doesn't say b'feirish that chodesh is also in chutz aretz, so therefore we'll follow the other Shita and Tanoi, and the Chodesh is not Aser in Chutz Aretz, because it's a Shas Hadchak. And he quotes a Gemara in Nida, V'raya B'ru L'Azem Yiparakama De Nida, Tan Rabbona Maisa V'Aser Rebbe Kreb L'Yazer Lingin Daya Shaita De Nida. Right, there's a case that a woman hasn't had a period in 3 months, so Rebbe Eliezer has the shita that it's by definition dayashaita. Dayashaita means that she's only tameya for purposes of taharos mikan lahaba, that we don't have to assume that because she's tameya now that the taharos that she touched previously are also tamei. So Rebbe once passing like Rebbe Eliezer for dayashaita, la'achar sheniskar, he said, kedai Rebbe Eliezer l'smocholov v'shas hadchak. And then the Gemara says that you could only say this line since it's not halacha psa. Meaning to say, what the Taz is arguing is, whenever We don't have an explicit Gemara that paskins one way. So therefore I could say Bishas Hadrach will follow the other opinion, even though it's Yachid against Rabbim. And ordinarily in Halacha we follow the Rabbim, but still we could say, since the Gemara doesn't explicitly paskin, we could paskin like the otherwise rejected position. That is what the Taz says, and therefore you could be make on beer or an Or Chadash because it's a Shas Hadrach. The interesting thing within the Taz is that he doesn't suggest to only be make on beer and to be machmir macaroni or the equivalent, right? The Taz is basically saying since it's a Shas Hadrach with respect to beer, you have to be make on, or you have the ability, Kedai who b'Shas Hadrach, to rely on this opinion. End of conversation, that's what the Taz says. And Rav Kook basically uses this Taz as the basis of relying on this Raivin Abahamar that the din of Shemitah is only Amidas Chasidus, and B'Shas Hadchak you can rely on it. Now, the Taz, of course, had an opponent in life, the Shachna. The story goes, the way that Rav Salvation used to say the story is that the Shach was a little kid. Now, the Shach was born in 1621. He died in 1662. The Shach, by the way, is the coolest person ever. That's like the basic introduction. We love the Shach. So the Shach was around 19 years old when he wrote his Sefer on Yerideya, and he also didn't have smicha. And he needed to get smicha because the Vad Arba HaRotzos assumed that you can't publish a book without having smicha. So the Shach decided to leave Lithuania, where he was, which was really an intellectual backwater at that time, and he had to travel to Poland to try to get smicha. So he travels to the Gadol Hadar's house, the Taz. The Taz was considerably older than the Shach. The Taz was born in 1586 and died in 1676. And he travels to the Taz's house to try to get smicha, and the Taz looks at his book, and the Taz realizes that he himself is writing a work on Yerideya. Again, this is the way the story is quoted in Rav Schechter's Nefesh HaRav. The Taz realized that the Shach's work on Yerideya is superior to his own work, so the Taz says, you know, I can't give smicha to this guy, because if I give smicha to this guy, then they'll publish his work, and no one's going to read my work. So the Taz says, like, I'm not going to give smicha to the Shach, and the Taz decided to, like, try to upschlug everything that the Shach has in the Sefer, to, like, argue with all the details, and that's why there's, like, a Kusachron and a Dafachron, and they go back and forth on the pages of Yerideya, they're, like, fighting against each other, and that's all from that time that the Shach met the Taz. The story, of course, goes that when Rav Shechter published the Sefer in the Nefesh HaRav, so Rav Meir Goldbach decided to bring the Sefer Nefesh HaRav to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and Rav Shlomo Zalman read the Sefer, and he said, send a message to Rav Shechter that you shouldn't publish that story about the Shach and the Taz, because it's not respectful to the Taz. Mm. And for some reason, it's still in the Sefer. What? Right. But this is the basis of everything. And the Rav, when the Rav taught Yerideya, and when the Rav taught Hilchos Nidah, in the later years the Rav would quote Taz. But in the earlier years, the Rav would only quote the Shach, because the Taz, he felt, was not as reputable or safer as the Shach. The Taz is also just, I mean, Chaim Soloveitchik goes to say, the Taz is just not as good of a work. The Shach is, like, really good.
What happened in the later years, the Rav decided the Taz.
The Rav got bored.
What?
The way Rav Shechter told the story to me was that one of the few private conversations I've ever had with Rav Shechter, because I was never a Talmud of his, but I was once driving him home from a wedding from El Kariv in Brooklyn all the way to Washington Heights, so we had like 4 hours, you know, so I was living here at the time, I think. So I still have a problem with a certain cause, and this sheet, I think it was, and so I was anyway, but then he told the story. He said, I wrote in the Sefer that I wrote in the Shara that the Rav didn't teach Tazas. And then he said, I got all these angry letters from people who said, when I was in the Rav Shira, he did do the Tazas. You know, so he said, later he got bored.
In later years, he was bored. You get bored when you teach the same thing every year. So you kind of want to, like, variety is the spice of life, so you want to, like, change things around a bit. So that's why he started teaching Taz, just to make things exciting. So the Shach, this whole introduction, the Shach disagrees with the Taz. And the shach in the Kudas HaKesef, the shach is also in Reish Mem Beis in Yoridei and Hanhagas Isser V'Heter. The shach writes, Gam HaShakosev Rai Brulas and Impact in Yidav Tess. And it should be Perak Beis, the Gittin Daf Yudtes, Lav Rayahi, Klau, Kamosha Chachti Beshach, the Simon Veshman Beis. The Davka Behafta needed the Gzeira Meisla Ace, Hidrabon and Aminan Hochi, Behem Gittin, the Dvartor, have the Gittin Kuliyama. Basically, the Shach is saying that we can only say the rules of Kedai Hu, so and so, Lis Mochola Beshach Sadchak, in situations where the issue at hand is an issue Drabonon. But in the situation where the issue at hand is a Deoraisa, so then the Shach's opinion is that you cannot say Kedai Hu so and so Lismochala Bashas Hadchak. Now
the Shemitah issue, isn't that the whole
So the Shemitah issue, so part of the big issue again, and Rav Kook was obviously willing to assume that Shemitah Bizman Hase is at worst Dirabonon.
Wasn't that the minority opinion that he's relying on?
No, the minority opinion to rely on was that Shemitah's only Midas Chasidus. It's not Dereis, it's not Dirabonon, it's just Midas Chasidus. But
so
if there's a
Dirabonon, so I'll rely on those opinions that say it's Midas Chasidus. Meaning, it's all the same question.
It's all the same question, correct. But if I could hold that the opinion of Shemitah Bizman as Doraisa somehow is rejected, mm-hmm. so then I'm stuck with Dirabonon versus Midas Chasidus, so then I have mm-hmm. room to wiggle. Or that's what the Shach assumes in the Kodesh HaKesef. The Taz is assuming that even in the case of Chodosh and Chutz La'aretz, which is a Doraisa, you can rely on a minority opinion, B'Shas HaTchak.
Can you re-explain the connection between the Tamei versus the Shemitah? What was the...
Right, so the Taz is bringing a proof that the Gemara... Here, actually, let's learn this Gemara now. It's the next source, and then we'll try to refocus on the Taz. Reb Eliezer says, Ko Isha She'avru Aleha 3 months and doesn't have blood is going to only be dayashata, that we don't have to be choshesh that she's tameya beforehand. Tanya, Amalim Rabbi Eliezer Chachamim, Maisa Beriva Achas Behitlu. There was a story with the girl. Hitlu is a town somewhere. Shehefsika Shalosh Onos, Uba Maisa Lefnei Chachamim, VaAmru Dayashata. Right. Once upon a time, the story happened, and they said dayashata. So that's Rabbi Eliezer's proof. So Amru lo, ein shas hadchak raya. My shas hadchak, what was the shas hadchak in that case? Ikka da amri shnei betzoris hevel. Either it was a famine year, and during times of famine, if you'll be metame the food, so you have even less to eat, and then you're really ofka hakta tzoris, which I also don't know how to say in Sardit. Ikka da amri taharos upish la'avida. That basically there was a lot of taharos that they made. It wasn't a year of famine, but there was just a significant amount of taharos that were made, and it would be a shas hadchak. V'choshi rabbonu lehefsed taharos. And the chachamim were choshesh, they were nervous, they were worried about ruining all of those taharos. So the story so far in the Gemara is that Rabbi Eliezer says one time they were makel, right? And the response is, no, don't bring any proof from there because that was a shas hadchak. Right? Mm-hmm. And the shas hadchak also seems from the Gemara to be defined in financial terms, no? Shas hadchak means that it's a famine, either and there's zero food, or in this one case, it was significant loss. And if that's the case, then shas hadchak would be roughly the equivalent of what we call in Yerideh a hefse merubah. Yeah, I know I didn't answer your question yet.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. In this case, that's the only nafka mina, really. Meaning it's not questioning whether she's Tamea, Lebala,
She certainly
is Tamea.
She is Tamea. The only question is, do we have to be nervous about the stuff that she touched beforehand?
Right. So it is still only for Taharot, and I guess the only nafka mina would be, in terms of like what would be bad, would be not being able to eat or use whatever she touched.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. That's the only issue at hand in this Gemara, but we'll try to draw things out from this conversation. Toner Rabbanon, Maisa v'asa Rebbe k'Rabbi Eliezer. La'achar shenizkar, once upon a time Rebbe pasuk Rebbe Eliezer. After he remembered that, how are you pasuk Rebbe Eliezer, basically? By the way, it's also interesting that Rebbe Eliezer is shamuti, the Gemara says. which Tosfos has a machlokas with Rashi in Perkei Blazer de Mila and elsewhere, that might mean Nida also. Tosfos and Nida also might mean that he's a Talmud of Beis Shammai. But so once upon a time, Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, Rabbi Paskin's like Rabbi Eliezer, La Achash and Nisgar Amar Kedaihu Rabbi Eliezer Lismochal B'Shasat Chak, right?
And
that
they burned all his Tarot in
Bavmitzia. What?
And they burn all of Rabbi Eliezer's Taharot.
Yeah, because Rabbi in the Tanur Shachnai case, right, he's not a winner in Talmudic literature. So that's what the Gemara says. Kedaihu Rabbi Eliezer l'smochol b'shasat chak. Mai la'achash in this guy, what does it mean? Ilem la'achash in this guy, de'en lach Rabbi Eliezer, k'rabbonon b'shasat chak, k'ich avikavosei. If you remember that Rabbi Eliezer is dead wrong, how could you pass him like him even in a difficult situation? Ella... Lo itmar hilchasa, lo kemar, velo kemar. Right? Rather, the case is that the halacha was not formulated according to anyone. Umay la achash and nisgar, delav yachid poligale, elo rabim, pligiale, omar kedai rebblazer, lo smuchal b'shasat chak. Rather, the Gemara says that there is no halacha that was formulated in this case. We do not paskin explicitly against Rabbi Eliezer. If we would say that Rabbi Eliezer is wrong, you can't rely on him even b'shasat chak. Right, so the case of Kedai who lismochol b'shasat chak is just that it's a yachid against the rabbim, and yachid against a rabbim. The impression you get from the Gemara, even though we have rules of how to paskin, that you paskin like the rabbim, but general global rules are different than a specific ruling in this case. Right, because in this case they are not specifically saying Rebbe Eliezer is wrong. It's only based on general rules of Yachid v'Rabim. So then we could say Kedaihu l'smochol b'shasat chak. So far, so good.
So if a specific person was holy on Rebbe Eliezer, and usually passing like that person, we wouldn't be able to use Rebbe Eliezer.
So if it's the way, one way to read the Gemara. Is if the Gemara had we had a specific psak that Rabbi Eliezer is wrong in this case, we could not rely on him in the Shasat Chak even. But since it's based on Klalei HaPsak, on general rules, so then B'Shasat Chak you can rely on it. That, I would say, is the standard approach to the Gemara. That certainly is the way Rav Kook takes it. In other words, Yachid v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim, is based on Klalei HaPsak in general. So yes, the position of the Raivin and the Bahamur is a minority opinion, but you could resurrect a minority opinion, B'Shasat Chak. Right, that's Rav Kook's approach.
Why does B'Shach reject the Taz's use of this Gemara?
So the Shach saying, well, this Gemara is only dealing with an issue that's relevant for Drabonons. Right? Because the issue at hand in the Gemara's case is whether or not the Taharos are going to be Tomei L'Mefreya, which is at worst Drabonon, but I can't say Kedaihu in the case of a Doraisa. That's what the Shach is assuming. And Chodosh and Chutzla Aretz is a Doraisa, so therefore you can't. Right? It's Halacha Moshe Mesinai, which we treat like Doraisas, therefore you can't rely on it. That's basically the dispute between the Shach and the Taz and this Gemara. So now, did we answer your question about how the Taz proves anything from this Gemara? Okay. Actually, in the future, if people ask questions, if you could just introduce yourself. If you could just put... Well, yeah, I remember you from YU, but there are other people from the show, I mean, the other people around the table who I don't know. If you could just please introduce yourself when you ask.
I'm Ruth
Dillard. Oh. Okay, how are you?
Good, thank
God. Oh gosh, this is like my childhood.
Yes, I'm old enough to be your mother. The question I had is about, you're saying that you can take a minority opinion, but you can't take a rejected opinion?
Correct. But how do I define minority versus rejected is one of the issues at hand. And I think what the simplest way to read the Gemara is that an opinion is rejected when the Gemara paskins this guy is wrong, then it's rejected. Short of that, I don't know if I could say the opinion is rejected.
You don't have that so often, or do you?
No, not at all. But I think the back and forth in the Gemara is Maila Achash in this guy. If it's Achash in this guy, the Ein Halacha Karabi Eliezer. If it's after Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, remember that they pass in the base message that Rabbi Eliezer is wrong, so then you can't resurrect him. Right? But if it's just based on Yochid V'Rabim, Halacha Karabim, then I can resurrect it. I think that is certainly a good reading of the Gemara. This is an approach that Rav Kook seems to take in the Gemara. Now, there's one, this line of Kedai hu so-and-so lismuchola b'shas etchak appears tzvei molen shas, right? It appears twice in the Gemara. Here in Nida on Daf Tes and in Gittin on Daf Yud Tes. Gittin on Daf Yud Tes is a something else that Rabbi Bergerland in the Kol HaElyon, in terms of if you have a get that's written during the day and is signed at night, so there's a discussion in the Gemara whether the get is kosher or not. And the Gemara there says, Kedai hu shimin lismuchola b'shas hadchak. And shas hadchak in that case is defined, right, in a genuine aguna situation. Right? That's the way Rashi understands that Gemara in Gittin Yud Tes. Lismuchola b'shas hadchak shehalach zeh l'darko o nisses kfar beget zeh. Right, one of two possibilities: either potential mamzerus, or potentially ruining a marriage completely, or shas hadchak that the husband is not around anymore. We can't get another get from him. So, if I read the Talmudic literature on what a shas hadchak is, I have hefsid meruba, certainly financial issues. That's the issue in Nida Daf Tes. I also have aguna cases being a shas hadchak in Gittin Yud Tes, but both of these cases in the Gemara of Kedai hu so and so lismochala b'shas hadchak, both of these cases are only talking about derabbanons, like the Shach points out. The Taz is extending it even to deoraisas. Yeah.
How is mamzerut derabbanon?
So the issue is that min haTorah the get is going to be kosher, certainly, because the only problem, if I have a get written during the day and signed at night, is a concern of collecting payrolls illegitimately. If the husband sold the payrolls, etc., to get into the details just take us a little too far afield, but that's only an issue midrabanan. Yeah, you had a question, I'm sorry. Okay. You had a question twice, I think we cut you off.
It was
both
the same question.
Oh, okay.
I can get back to it.
Okay. Fine. So that is, this is the basic sugya. Turn to the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish is really interesting over here. Chazon Ish is the last page. This Chazon Ish appears twice. The Chazon Ish writes, here, let's begin. You see paragraph Daled, that begins V'nir'eh, towards the end of the paragraph. This Chazon Ish is a Chazon Ish in Shvi'is Simen Chof Gimel, where he's arguing on Rav Kook in Shabbat Ha'aret, and then the Chazon Ish also cut and pasted, so it appears in his Sefer Yerideya Simen Kufnun as well. So the Chazon Ish, first of all, changes the text in the Tshuvas HaRashba to fit in with what he wants to say, and writes, Nirin HaDevarim, D'nishmatu Kan B'Hataka, V'Kavonas HaRashba, D'lo Nema Din Shas Hatcha, Keched Halacha Huchra Al Pi Din, Halacha Archa Gadol, O Archa Rabim, Elo B'Makom, D'lo Itmar Hilchasa, Mipnei D'Mistaber Tami D'Yachid, O Shal Katon Eto Chachmi Dar Haba. You see that? I think that's like the key line in the Chazon Ish. It's in the bracket. It's seven lines up in this first paragraph that begins Vihine. Basically, the Chazon Ish is saying that the rules of Shas HaDechak...
I'm sorry, could you please repeat?
Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... you see there's a paragraph that begins V'nir'eh with the letter Dalet.
Yes.
Okay, eight lines before the end of that paragraph, there is one sentence in brackets. And if I'm correct,
that's the sentence we're looking at.
I think that's the main sentence, and then the Chazon Ish really elaborates on it. It's all based on the Tshuvas HaRashba that the Chazon Ish feels he has to amend the text in the Rashba to fit in with what he wants to say. By the way, the Chazon Ish is somebody whose entire approach is just texts. He wasn't really, he wasn't so into people. He was into understanding texts, and he would amend texts, very similar to the Vilna Gaon. That's another thing I'm teaching in my show this summer. Very similar to the Vilna Gaon, the Chazon Ish had these a priori assumptions about what things can mean, and he would amend texts to fit in with those assumptions. So he writes, Kavanas HaRashba. You see where it says that line in brackets, two lines on top of that, I guess, is a good beginning place, a good starting point. The Kavanas HaRashba, Delo Nemar Din Shasatcha Keched Alocha Huchra Al Pi Din, Haloch Acha HaGodo O Acha HaRabim. The Rashba is telling me that I do not say that in a Shas HaDchak you can follow a minority opinion. When we would use the rules of Halach Acha HaGadol, of following the greater posek, or rules of Halach Acha HaRabim, then Shas HaDchak does not allow me to follow the minority opinion. The only time I can follow a minority opinion is Ela B'Makom Delo Itmar Hilchasa, which means Mipnei Demistaber Tamei DeYochid O Shokotan Esochach MeHadar Haba. Right, what the Chazon Ish is saying is, right, that he's basically reinterpreting the Gemara. No, the Gemara says that you could follow Rabbi Eliezer b'shas hadchak, even though it's yochid v'ram halacha k'rabim, and even though ordinarily you follow, right, the rabbin, but shas hadchak you could follow the yochid. Zok l'chazon ish, that's not true. That's only true in the case when it's mistaber tamei the yochid. That's only true in the case where the chach midar haba, the later generation felt that the Yachid is more logical. Short of that, you cannot follow the Yachid. And you cannot follow the Katan opinion. If someone is, like, I don't know, class B ball, you can't follow his opinion, right, against the class A players because you're a Katan. You can only do that when it's Mistaber Tamei. And that, if I'm reading it correctly, that is how the Chazon Ish is interpreting this Gemara in Nida Daf Tes. Let's read the next paragraph, where the Chazon Ish really spells it out.
And here he's also saying that if the Psach is like somebody just based on Klalei Psach, now she's...
Exactly. So the Chazon Ish is completely against the way we understood the Gemara. Right, the Chazon Ish is saying that if I have Klalei HaPsak of Yochid V'Rabim Halachik Rabim, you follow the Rabim, and you can't even resurrect the Yochid B'Shas HaDchak. You're gone. You are rejected. You're in the dustbin of Halachic history. Right, nothing else to talk about.
Well, unless the next generation likes you.
If the next generation rejects you. So, and then he writes, here, next paragraph. V'hinei b'makom d'nechluku ha-poskim, m'rov ha-poskim maskimim, l'das achas, ein sobchen al ha-yochid, af b'shas hadchak. D'zem mikri itmar hilchasa. Right, remember, the Gemara says that when it's itmar hilchasa, you can't follow, you can't say, k'day hu so-and-so b'shas hadchak. Zok l'chazon ish, if rov poskim follow one approach, you can't rely on the Yachid even in Shas HaDchak. Dezem mikri itmar hilchasa. V'kol shekein kishe'ein plukta ba'achronim. Certainly where later generations all side with one approach, right, ukigon, shenechelku b'doro shaharambam, but hiskimu harosh v'haran, l'das echod mehem, you can't rely on the other opinion. O shechriya ha-shulchan aruch v'achronim, l'das achas, zem mikri itmar hilchasa. The Chazon Ish goes further. The Chazon Ish says, if Shulchan Aruch paskins one way, that's called itmar hilchasa, and you can't rely on the other opinion, even b'shas hadchak, no? The Chazon Ish, by the way, takes the approach in general that Shulchan Aruch is binding because Klal Yisrael accepted it. That's considered Rov HaPoskim. And Rov, Shulchan Aruch again in the broader sense. Shulchan Aruch with Ramon, no say Kevon. So the Chazon Ish is saying you cannot follow a Yachid against Rabbim, even B'Shas HaDchak, because the rule of Klalei HaPsak, of Yachid Rabbim HaLochik K'Rabbim, even if it's Klalei HaPsak in later generations, means that the other Shita is completely rejected. So far, so good. Min HaAmor, again, I skip one paragraph and top paragraph of the next page. Min ha'amr nomad she'ein makim l'hakel b'shvias b'zman ezem b'shem das ha'raibit v'arazo ha'mekilim kevan she'kol ha'poskim chokin alayhin v'aramban rash b'ran she'yu achreihim amru ein ha'lochik ha'raib v'arazo u'b'seif ha'atshrum ha'siyin v'ein b'dover zeh b'es mechosh v'safek v'huva b'es yosef simin samach zayin ha'rei itmar hilchus ha'dein ha'lochik kamosam. And some say that the raibit changed his mind. Right, basically he's saying that the Ravid and the Baal Hamor are gone. Why? Yachav Rabim Halacha Karabim. Later generations disagree with him, you can't resurrect it. Now, just a few more points over here. We could probably go on for another hour, and I said this should be half an hour to 45 minutes, so I'm already over time. So you have to, yeah.
I'm Dahlia Shulman.
Yeah, we met. Got it.
Just a question on this. Because you said that he takes the Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, Nosi, Kinah all in one big package. We all know it's not one big package. And it is more complicated than that. And the Nosi, Kinah are often full, like, on the Shulchan Aruch. What does he do with that?
Yes, I think he
means... that's not a simple answer.
In other words, Shulchan Aruch means the page. Right, it doesn't just mean Rabbi Yosef Karo. So if there is consensus among Shach and Taz that the Mechaber is wrong, or consensus among the Nosei Kelim that the Halacha is one way, so that's called Itmar Hilchasa, and the other positions are going to be completely rejected.
Mm-hmm. And when there isn't consensus?
When there isn't consensus, so if it's an open Machloka, so then I could say, Kedai Hu Vishas Adchak. But for the Chazon Ish, I can only say it when it's an open issue. Once the issue has been decided by poskim writ large, so that's the end. By the way, we are not talking about if my own Rebbe, teacher, etc. has an opinion. Right? If my own Rebbe has an opinion, so then the Asr Debiyosi Haglili, they bus her off Bukholov. Right? That's not part of this conversation. This is talking about I sitting in the base medrash and my rebellion are all the books on the wall. Right, that's a different issue. Yeah. Now, two more issues just to focus on. Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva in Igros Moshe. I didn't give this to you on the source sheet. It's probably long enough as it is. But Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva in Igros Moshe, it's Chelek Aleph of Orachayim, Simen Nun Aleph. The question that came up was, can I build a mikvah for women in the Ezras Noshim of a Shul? Basically, this is an early truth that Rav Moshe wrote when he was still in Luban, and the Jewish community didn't have rights to another building. The only building that the community was allowed to use was the Shul building, and they needed a mikvah, obviously. So is it considered Horada from Kedushas Beis Knesses to have a mikvah in the Ezras Noshim Rishon? That was the question of that tshuva in Igros Moshe. So if Moshe writes, Kedai hu lismachol of b'shas adchak, Kedai hu shitin the Rishonim, etc. And even though it's a rejected shita, a minority shita, like pick your term, Rav Moshe says that the only time you cannot say Kedai hu lismachol of b'shas adchak is when Gemara paskins. But if it's an issue that is within Rishonim and within Poskim, even if there's a clear consensus among Rishonim and Poskim that such and such is a minority opinion, Zakvim Moshe in the Shas HaDchak, you can rely on it. So that is similar to the Chazon Ish, but very different than the Chazon Ish, right? Because the Chazon Ish is assuming that the halachic process of consensus rejecting opinions is ongoing, right? That is... Again, and that's part of the larger conversation about that we really can't have because they'd accuse us of being reform about what's the binding nature of Shulchan Aruch, Right? That is a very scary conversation, but that's obviously part of this. Okay.
For Moshe saying that when an opinion is rejected in the Gemara, even by Kvali Psak.
Yes.
Then you can't resurrect.
But if it's a position that is only rejected by Yochid V'Rabim, by Kvali HaPsak, within Rishonim or Achronim, so then you can rely on it. Yeah, Dalia.
Back to the Chazon Ish, it seems like there are two layers. First, he says we can't accept the rejected opinion in the Gemara, but we also can't accept the rejected Ravid in Balamor. Is he lumping that all together as one Svara?
I think so. The Chazon Ish assumes that there is something called the ongoing halachic process, and Yochev Rabim halachic Rabim. Rabim is Koveya throughout.
And
yeah.
For Moshe, when he says if it's something that's only rejected by Kvali Psak and the Rishonim, then you can rely on it. But if something, what does it mean for something to be explicitly rejected by the Rishonim? Meaning
that won't be. It's not possible.
Okay.
Well, within the Gemara, I could have the conversation. Once we're going to be shown him for Rav Moshe...
Meaning, who's going to be the one that we rely on? Is that Pesachim, Rambam, and that, you know?
So. Again, I actually wrote an article a few years ago in the RJJ Journal about what happens when the Erev falls down on Shabbos. And one of the questions is, can you rely on, there's an opinion of a tshuva of Shlomo Kluger, that if an Erev falls down on Shabbos, since the Erev was up at the beginning of Shabbos, the Erev is still kosher. So Rav Shechter told me that he felt that opinion is completely rejected, and even though halachic the Ramekel bit Eruv, which we apply even to Mechitos, but we don't say that by completely rejected opinions. If I'm correct within what Rav Moshe is saying, there's no such thing as a completely rejected opinion within Rishonim and Achronim. The notion of completely rejected opinions just doesn't exist. Okay, let's go on. Rav Kook wants to argue that even though the issue of Shemitah is possibly d'oraisa, and therefore one could say that according to the Shach, we can't say kedai hu b'shas hadchak, still, this issue basically boils down to drabbanon, and the argument that Rav Kook has is that the only time that the rule of Yochid V'Rabim Halachic Rabim is a d'oraisa rule is when they were umdule minyan. In other words, if I have a bezin proceeding and we're all in the same room, and we are voting, and I hear your side and you hear my side and I reject you, and then we vote. So in the situation of a vote, that's when the rove is a rove min ha-Torah that has to be followed. But in a situation that we are not in the same room conversing with each other, so then Rav Kook feels, and the Minchas Chinuch quotes this on the Sefer Get Poshut, etc. That's the next sources on the sheet. Then Rav Kook feels that in that situation, the rule of Achrei Rabim Lahatos is not a d'oraisa rule, it's only a drabbanan rule, and once it's a drabbanan rule, even the Shach would acknowledge you could rely on the minority opinion. Right, that's basically the way Rav Kook gets at all of it. Okay, so this is some of the parameters of Shas HaDchak. Again, in terms of conclusions over here, I don't know what to do. But let's just talk about one case that comes up all the time. A woman does a Bedika Yom Rishon and doesn't do any Bedika Yom Shvi'i. I had a case, a woman came to me in Shul Friday night, crying. She's like, I'm supposed to go to mikveh tonight. I'm like, that's a little bit too much information, but like, why are you upset? So she, I didn't really say that. So then she basically said that she only did a bedika yom rishon, she didn't do any bedika yom shvi'i, so what's the story in that case? So we know that the Gemara has a machlokas rav Reb Chanina, and we know that the Beis Yosef says that that you can't be mekel because it's a potential iser kares. So, and the Shulchan Aruch has two opinions, and the last line in the Mechaber is Rishon Shvi'i ve'ein l'hakel, and what does ein l'hakel mean? So, there are obviously different ways of reading that Mechaber, and it could be that the fact that Mechaber is saying ein l'hakel means that he recognizes that kula is possible. I think that's a difficult read. I think ein l'hakel means ein l'hakel. How come it's in Shulchan Aruch? So, I think Shulchan Aruch is written as just a review text, no?
Well, maybe, couldn't you say that since he writes it as the Yishon Rimna, as the Stani wants to tell you that in this case, usually we like in standard cases, you should follow the Yishon Rimna.
Stam v'yeshomrim, so the general rules are you follow the yomrim, but over here he says ein lahaka. Stam v'yeshom, you follow the stam, right? But over here,
right. So couldn't he have written ein lahaka to tell you, even though usually you should follow the stam, here you should follow the yeshomrim?
But
the
that just
case?
Begs the question: why would he write it that way? Right? Why would he write ein lahaka on an opinion that he decided to quote it? Right? That makes the question even stronger, right? In the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes. So then it works. So the usual rules would be that we follow the stam. Right? Over here, he quotes the stam and he says, ain lahaka, like the stam, which is really confusing.
The reason he does that here, I thought, is because he's not following his usual calling of sat. In other words, his normal sat would have been. Like,
to follow the role of Harishonim. Shown him.
That's what I'm saying.
Quotes it, and then he says, well, in this case, you know, I want to follow the Machmir, even though that's.
That's what I was thinking.
It's still a question of does he really
The real question is, right. Can you be makel when the Mechaber says ein lahakel?
Right. Well, that's suggesting, but I think what Rabbi Schwartz is suggesting is that if that's the case, why did he quote this stam at all?
I mean, why does he quote the first opinion at all if he's saying ein lahakel like it? I think
but
that
you could ask on every case of stam.
No, so I don't think you can, because I think the way Shulchan Aruch is written, the Mechaber writes in his introduction is that you're really supposed to learn Beis Yosef, and Shulchan Aruch is his expression. Pardon, this expression is for the Balabatim who won the review very quickly. So, and the original printings of Shulchan Aruch were divided up into 30 days, and you just read it through very quickly and you review every 30 days. And it's like a review text of all the basic shitos, but this is not the Sefer of Psak by any stretch. So there is a shita out there. He wants you to remember the shita, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why it's quoted. I'm sorry, you had a question, but
no,
please tell me your name.
Julia. That in the Israel program, because I was there this year, Rabbi Hafdig, one of the learners said that, I think it was Rabbi Hafdig, that the reason is, like, if you ever need to rely on that, it's there.
So that means that
not
you
can't... that you should remember that there is a shita, but you should remember it for a reason if you need it.
Okay, so that would mean that we are assuming that in a difficult situation, you can rely on it.
Right.
It says ein lahakel. So the ein lahakel doesn't really mean, pardon me, ein lahakel, it means try to avoid being makel. Right? Which, again, the lashon is a little bit dachuk, certainly, to say it that way. But it's worth focusing on, nonetheless. So what happens? Can you be makel in these cases? When it says ein lahakel, shas hadchak. Right. So, what would the shach say? Do we assume that bedika of rishon and shvi is that an issue d'oraisa? That's an issue d'rabbanon. Right. The pashtus. What?
I was going to say it depends how we look at how we treat keeping Takanas Revi and
So it could be that everything we have today is only Dirabbanan. Certainly. It could be that because there's no Hargasha, we are clearly in Dirabbanan land. It could be that even were there to be a Hargasha, one could argue that Min HaTorah Rishon Oshvi'i is enough, and it's only some din d'rabbanan that we require some sort of bookends to establish a svira throughout the period, rather than relying on chazaka. B'chol ha'Torah kula, chazaka is sufficient, but we want to bookend it in order to treat each day with as a day that's considered a day that is a counted day. That's another way of looking at it. So one could argue certainly that this din is a din. The Beis Yosef is clearly not saying that way, no? The Beis Yosef is clearly saying that since a suffix is a kares, you have to be machmir. He's clearly saying, again, no one understands exactly why. No one. But he's clearly saying that he's treating this like d'oraisa. If it's in d'rabbanan land, I don't talk about iser kares at all, no? Mm-hmm. So now,
Actually, in this case of like a woman who forgets on the seventh day, Rav Rahaftig says,
do a bedikah before you go to the mikvah.
No. She has to keep a whole new shiv and kiyam to teach her a lesson or something.
He comes from the chinuch perspective.
Doesn't sound like Rav Rahaftig.
No, I think it's shiv and kiyam. A whole new
shivan
kiyam, but definitely more than you think.
I mean, technically, if you hold mishum shviga in lahakel, so then you have to start again.
Yeah,
for halacha reasons.
But what if she did? Because I'm sorry. What if she did on the second day of bedikah?
So if you did a bedikah on the second day, so already you have the dogam of the pisri tshuva quotes. Once you have one additional bedikah, so we got some wiggle room.
Or even if you're gonna be machmir, yeah. You only have to.
I think Rabbi Berger had a question though.
Why is this a shas
hadchak question?
This is the case that Shulchan Aruch was talking about.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's what I would have said on my own.
Why this is even part of the Shas HaTchak discussion.
So one would say it's not a Shas HaTchak, especially since Shas HaTchak means, from the Gemara, serious financial loss, or potentially aguna, right? This is clearly not a Shas HaTchak. But if Schechter told me, when I discussed this Shiloh with him, he felt that it's considered Shas HaTchak for us because in our world today, to have a woman Tameya more than half the month is by definition a Shas HaTchak. So I have to figure out exactly what his makar is.
Even if you say that this is a Shas HaTchak, that this kind of hardship qualifies as a Shas HaTchak.
Is
obviously it doesn't in this case, because this is the difference between the first sheet and the second sheet.
One could argue that the year 2014 is different than the 1560s, it was written. Yeah.
Also, based on what Rav Schechter was saying, the Gemara was having this discussion. It was a discussion post Takana Sarevi.
What about the Shulchan Aruch, not the Gemara?
But the Shulchan Aruch is working with this. I guess.
Not in a certain way for his time.
But meaning it could you could. I'm not sure if this is what the Shechter meant, but is he saying that all of the Chosnita always nowadays is a Shas HaTchak because a woman's
so,
keeping
so that's really what I have to get to the bottom of. Classical poskim, I think, would be closer to what Rav Rahaftig is saying. You open the Chochmas Sadim, the Aruch HaShulchan, they're only going to be make on this question, the Rishon Afapi She'in Shvi'i, in a situation that's a genuine, what I would call Shas HaTchak, a woman who has makos of tzom and can't become tahora otherwise. What?
Like a chupas nida or something like that.
Chupas nida, perhaps, right.
What about if she's trying to get pregnant?
What?
What about if she's trying to get pregnant? Not really.
I don't know. I mean, my assumption is that the time of Chazal, everyone was trying to get pregnant because you didn't know how long you would live. I mean, in all seriousness, like if your life expectancy is much shorter, you want to have your babies earlier.
It was often having the babies that make people.
Having babies itself would kill you. Often, I mean, that's also true.
But so there's a catch-22 there.
I don't know. I think though this is one of the open questions as to, do I define it as Shas HaTchak? I have to admit that when this shaila came up to me, I took the fifth. In the sense, officially in Washington Heights in those years, this actually changed a few months ago, but officially I was not allowed to pass in any shaylas in the mikveh. All the shaylas in the mikveh had to go to the Breuer's Rebbonim. So I told the woman, go to the mikveh and let Rav Mantel sweat it out. And he actually was mekel. I have no idea why. Fine. I said, go to the mikveh, tell the mikveh lady the story, and then the shaylas out of my hands.
Wasn't this on Friday night, though?
Yeah.
You're going to call them.
What? So no, so she had to run over to his house, and she told me she was waiting in the mikveh for 3 hours. Again, this was not... What?
The mikveh lady.
Someone went.
Like, no, she went to ask the shaila for the rabbi.
I don't know exactly... I mean, the way I heard the story after is that... So this was not like... Again, it's not a simple shaila, obviously, and we don't want to get in this situation. Obviously, we want to encourage people not only to try bedikos rishon shvi'i, or if you're going to do it, make sure you don't forget that. I think standard Judaism, but
this is the original context of the kuva of Lontzei Tovala.
So in the Chassam Sofer's Tshuva, the Pesachim Tshuva quotes, that's precisely in this case. Once they slept together, so then we can be Mekel. But beforehand, right, it's classical poskim are not Mekel on this. Classical poskim, you open the Sfarim, they are not Mekel on this question. Do we assume that because of our social realities, so it's a shasat chayim? Someone told me that one of the poskim in Farakaway, a friend of mine who's a rabbi in Farakaway, told me that Rabbi Forrest, when he gets a shaila like this, he looks at you and tries to determine whether or not you have Yiras Shamayim. I don't understand that. But
and then he decides his answer.
What?
No, no, but
this one,
then
he hates them in person.
And then he decides his answer?
Right. No, if he feels that the couple might be nichshal potentially because they don't have enough Yiras Shamayim, he's more inclined to be meikel because, right, that's a genuine shasat chak, I assume, if you assume that the couple might be nichshal. What?
Yeah, I thought you were saying
then you don't have Yiras Shamayim.
Yeah.
Right, you felt like we're half saying like they don't need to learn the lesson.
Right. I can be made that my willing was not me about such a shy, like even in a chuppah's nida case.
No chuppah's nida case.
That's your famous case, right?
In a case where it meant, you know, she would have to go to the mikvah after the wedding, you know, the same day, you know.
The same day or the day?
But if it's the same day, it's much less of.
There was a much more complicated story, whatever, but there's a lot more behind it.
Okay. Yeah, Dalia.
I think over half day he told us when we were in Israel that if the woman has a legitimate excuse why she forgot, he'll be makel. Otherwise, he's machmir as a knas.
She has a legitimate. What's considered a legitimate excuse?
Right, so I don't know. But
like her child
that
sick in the hospital or something. I think he gave.
That's why she didn't.
I think
that
was
just like
a
she
fun
was
thing.
But that doesn't have anything to do with her shasat chak right now, how she feels going to the mikvah later when she has to.
It has to do with why she was there.
Right.
Right.
I mean, it could be equally a shasat chak.
I don't know. The basic point I'm trying to get at is, it seems to me, based on classical poskim, that just, again, we obviously have to be very sensitive when someone is crying and someone's in a difficult situation, but I don't know if that necessarily makes it shasat chak. In fact, I'm inclined that, as much as this sounds very callous, but that doesn't make it a shasat chak. Just because there's emotional stress, I don't think that would be a shasat chak, certainly to rely on a minority opinion. Now, whether this case is that same situation or not, right, this case, like, the tables are turned. The opinion that we're not supposed to rely on happens to be the majority opinion. But this is all something, again, to my mind, this is another thing to include in this equation. And I thank you for listening. Have a good day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fact that in Psak Halacha, we're always told to ask people about extra extenuating circumstances that we could bring to the rabbi. You know, are there shalom bias issues? Or how are you feeling? And how?
Right.
When does that have an impact? And when does that not? When you get these kind of things.
So that's really what.
Not this shalom in particular.
So that's really what we're getting at. I mean, technically speaking, shalom bias, I think, is a little bit like the Eaglin type cases that the post can really consider shasat chak. Because we're, you know, the entire marriage could potentially fall apart. But other subjective factors is very hard to. Again, I'm not saying to be insensitive, chas v'shalom. Chas v'shalom. Like, you have to be very sensitive to people. But in terms of ultimately deciding the halacha, I'm not sure whether the other factors really rise to the level of being considered a shasat chak, as important as they are.
What? You can use them as a snifl hakel.
If they can be used as a snifl hakel, if there is, and obviously you have to include all the possible kulas in the question, but yeah.
It's always worth finding out what they are and then you can or cannot.
I mean, it seems like it's very much a scale because there's a difference of someone who's like, mm-hmm. oh, I've had a really hard week versus someone who, I don't know, mm-hmm. maybe they were separated and now they're finally decided to resolve their marriage and now they're coming back together and this is the first time.
No, just using the word shalom bias isn't a catchphrase for it.
That's what I mean. Like, shalom bias is like, oh, we've had a really hard week, we had a big fight versus like, we were going to get divorced and now we're trying to not get divorced. Those are very different shalom bias.
100%.
There's also a difference between the cases we've kind of been talking about, which are cases where you want to be makel against the Shulchan Aruch or against some sort of consensus psak, and other cases where, you know, it's somewhat more of a shikul hadas, you know, issue.
When it's more of an open issue in poskim,
but clear pesach, again, this issue, this kind of issue, can be part of your, you know, some part, and that makes it a little easier to shift a little depending on what it is.
My goal was not to come up with conclusions over here, just to raise a few issues, and I think we raised issues, so thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.